of this. And I had talked to a few customers because at the time, 2 years ago, I'm like, are you? I mean, you really want to bring these, you know, consumerized devices in your enterprise? I mean, that's not very secure. That's not very safe. And I was telling all the customers, you know, here's 100 reasons why you shouldn't do it, right? And the customer's like, no, no, no. I want you to tell me how to enable this. And I kept talking, and I started beating the doors down to our different business groups, the Windows Client BG, the System Center business group, you know, the Office business group, saying, hey, we want some answers. Our customers want to know how to do consumerization of IT. This was 2 years ago. Nobody would talk to me. Nobody wanted to hear, you know, help me with a, you know, with this problem. Nobody wanted to give me any solution. Until a year ago last April. What happened then, right? Apple iPad. All of a sudden, it was like, whoa, there was this one guy over in this group called Cat, and he was talking to us about this last year, bringing him back in here. We started talking, the door started opening up. We started to get some executive presence on consumerization of IT. We had some meetings out in New York last November. Now, my background is I'm a PC guy and a system center person, right? So it's all about, you know, PCs and VDI and virtualization and terminal services, application virtualization, application deployment, PC lifecycle, you know, all of that including System Center. But I brought Patrick, was a really good friend of mine. He did security and he did phone because they wanted a little bit of everything on the strategy. We flew out to New York, true story, we flew out to New York on a Monday. That Tuesday through Friday, we had customer meetings all about consumerization. We met with the usual suspects on Manhattan, so all the financial institutions, you know, the banks, you know, all these major corporations. They all wanted to know this. We thought we had a kind of a good story, but we were getting hammered. We were just getting slammed every time, every customer. We did our own debriefs after every session. Every time we met with four customers a day for three days. And the last day was our biggest customer, our hardest customer, who's going to be, you know, the biggest pain. We finally got into the secret sauce about two and a half, three days into this. We finally got into the secret sauce because we were told to defend our position at Microsoft without being defensive. And that's a very hard... yeah. We got some laughs on that one. That's a very hard thing with our personality to take. I'm a very offensive person, right?
Yes, he is.
But for us to sit there and say, well, how do I defend without being defensive? We want to go in there as a trusted advisor. Because I could have the same slide on there, and I could be very defensive, or I could defend with the same, it's just my tone. Our customers wanted us to be a trusted advisor in the account, saying, how and when do we do this? That's when the light bulb came on, didn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And we also discovered that we needed more help than just our expertise. And so as we started creating this, we went back to Redmond with all this stuff. And the last meeting went really well. That secret sauce, the light bulb went off, and we finally got it. But then we went back and pulled in the business productivity team, the application platform team, all these other teams to help us enable this across everything at Microsoft. And then we took this strategy up to the executive board. Steve Ballmer, all the executives, Kevin Turner, and we said, okay, this has to be a company-wide initiative for us. And the mantra that came out of this was...
Well, because each individual business unit, some were supporting it, some weren't. We had all the kinds of views across Microsoft, and we needed one story.
Right. And we took actually the business productivity team's mantra, which was best and first on Windows, but best in class on non-Windows devices. And so with that, we're going to play a quick video, and this is how we're going to... spend the rest of the time talking about all these things.
So, it's only 10 a.m. on Monday morning, and you're ready to ditch the IT field for a less frustrating career, like a lumberjack or a piranha dentist. There's a new girl who thought it would be smart to upload sensitive legal docs onto a cloud app so she could work on them from home. Sharon from finance is hovering over your desk, waiting for her turn. She bought the new robot phone that reads your email out loud while it makes your morning coffee. And she wants you to set up her company email on it. Then there's Jimbo from marketing, who wants to know if he can trade in his 3-month-old tablet he just had to have for one of those new MagicPad Savior of the World punch screen deals, which is definitely not on the list of approved devices. And while you're trying to explain these things to Jimbo, who just keeps saying, man, but the punch screen is so rad, you're thinking, seriously, aren't you the one who's supposed to be making the IT decisions around here? Isn't it your job to provide employees the technology they need to do their jobs well, while factoring in things like budgets and security? At least, that's how it used to be. People showed up in the morning, used whatever technology you provided them, did their jobs, and went home. And everyone started over the next morning. Things are changing. People have access to better and cheaper personal technology than they've ever had before. And technology isn't just changing how people work in general. It's actually blurring the lines between work and life. By giving folks more influence and choice over how and where they work, and what technology they use to get things done. This is consumerization, and it's impacting you and your company. Your job is to keep things safe, secure, and working properly. So how do you handle the risks that come with consumerization? Answer, you embrace the risks responsibly because the resulting opportunities are even greater. Consumerization is an opportunity for you to help people work in ways that better suit their jobs and their personalities. It's an opportunity to provide people with technology that makes them more productive and makes their work more enjoyable. Last time we checked, both of those things are good for business. So you have a choice. You can choose to resist consumerization, or you can choose to embrace consumerization responsibly and become a spearhead for the change it brings within your organization. Consumerization is happening, and it's good. Your organization becomes more productive with more choice. Jimbo is happy, and you're the hero. So if you're willing to say yes to the opportunities that consumerization brings, Microsoft is here to help.
You know, it's really funny. I mean, the BG came up with that, and I thought they nailed it. They absolutely nailed it. And literally, Patrick and I probably talked to, between the two of us, 250 to 300 companies a year, vice presidents and presidents of Fortune 500 companies. I am always hesitant to show that video. I mean, here's this guy who's making, you know, a couple million a year. You know, and I'm just this, you know, geeky computer guy showing a little cartoon video. At the end of that, he goes, yes, that's exactly what we're facing every single time.
Yeah.
I'm hesitant, I show it, and then they give me great feedback. They nailed that, because that's what you're all facing. And I saw a lot of great, you know, feedback from you guys, this is what what we're understanding. But how do we do, the key point of that is, how do we embrace consumerization responsibly? Right? This deck that we're going to show you, yeah, it's kind of a little bit of a pitch. There's not a lot of deep technology. Tomorrow, Patrick's going to go down the deep technology about all of the capabilities and features on how we do this. So this is more of a 100, 200 level presentation. Like I said, tomorrow we're going to go down that deep dive, but it's really good to understand both pieces of this. Yeah. As these trends are driving IT, as we're seeing this natural, you know, interaction, the data explosion, all kinds of displays, ubiquitous computing with all the devices, cloud computing, how does that all come into play? What, you know, how do we think about this as far as the devices, the application, the consumerization? Because we know the role of IT is changing. Because it's not just buying a whole bunch of supported, managed, you know, assets of the company. It's those plus the other devices that's coming in. What's really interesting is the people who have the most devices in your corporation are the executives. Those are the people who also have the access to the most confidential data. Right? It's kind of like a perfect storm right there. It's really interesting. So what is the appropriate information to put on there? So this is kind of our four pillars that we're going to be going down saying, how we look at this at a devices as a security and manageability. But wait, it's consumerization. Why do I have to worry about security and manageability? Yes, of course you do. It's all about security and manageability. Productivity across these devices. What's the pitch on that? How do we interact with our customers? How do we embrace these things? And then we'll talk about a little bit of the deployment. This is what I like to say is our famous slide. This really put it together for us. The first piece of this is, the very top axis, or that's not on there. Oh, it's on a different version. Think about the applications. The application at a business impact. far to the left, we have applications in that first column. It's low business impact. Low business impact, like email, calendar, and contact, is a low business impact. Yes, it might be mission critical, but most of the content is low business impact. I'm not going to define for you and your company what you define as low business impact, but just think about that. I could be anywhere in the world at a kiosk, anywhere in the world, and gain access to Microsoft email, calendar, and contact through a browser with an email, with a username and a password. Any device in the world. Now, that's from an unmanaged device. As I look at these business applications, we think about services like Windows Azure. I might have a service that has my customer relationship management database partly on Windows Azure. So for the sales team, they could be on any device in the world and with a username and password get aspects of their customer accounts because of the web services from Azure. But the secret information about those accounts might be in a separate database behind your firewall that only the managed computers can get to. So the managed computers get a 360 view of the data. The unmanaged computers get a subset of the data. That's how we're starting to think about this and talk to our customers. As we're taking a look at, if I'm on a kiosk computer somewhere in the world and Patrick sends me an email that's encrypted, I can't see that. It's DRM'd. It has digital rights on that email. I'd have to go to a somewhat managed PC right in the, or device in the middle, which might be a phone. The phone has a password policy set on it. It has a remote wipe. It can have a DRM'd email on it. We have a partner around that now, too.
Yeah, and we'll talk about that. And then, and the other thing, there's a spin on this is identity has to change, especially on the left side on the unmanaged. And he said, he kept saying kiosk, but let's talk about it. It's not just the kiosk. It's mobile phones, Windows, non-Windows, Android, iPhone, right? Because we can bring a consumer device into the organization. And I don't necessarily always want IT to manage my device because I purchased it with my own money. But IT has to have some kind of responsibility and understanding of what that device is. And so the thing that's not shown on here but that has to be brought into consideration is identity has to change now on the unmanaged side. And what I mean by identity has to change, we said username and password got Jeff a lot of access. But no more can I just rely upon that. Now I need to start wondering, as an IT person, I need to understand what device is it, right? Because some devices are better than others, right? Some devices have more security than others, right? Maybe I might make a business decision and say, okay, I'm allowing iPhones in, but I need version 4.3 or greater where I have device encryption as an option on that device. And maybe I say anything before that, I'm going to deny access. Or Android, right? I need 2.3, or if it's a Honeycomb tablet, a 3.0 with device encryption on it. Or say, and say for instance, a new software comes out, a new app comes out on the Android phone that causes major issues. Maybe I need to block it until they get that fixed. Maybe until I'm waiting for them to get a patch. So now I've gone from username and password. I could do multi-factor authentication if you're in some kind of government or high, you know, high security needs. Then I look at device type and operating system level of that device, and I have to now make decisions on that. And then the third thing in an identity is location. So let's think about location. Why would that be important? We all have Microsoft phones in the corporation, and we have different levels of data. So just like Jeff said, we've classified data in three ways: low business impact, medium, and high. All right, legal came down, gave us those classifications, and now all the data has to be meet one of those three criteria. High business impact data. Should I allow Jeff to go to a kiosk in Amsterdam and open up the source code repository? Yes? No? No. Okay.
You shouldn't allow me to go to Amsterdam. Period.
Coffee shop. Yeah. That's, we have to watch out. We have special locations. As soon as he enters Amsterdam, we know what to do with Jeff. Anyway. but I have access to high business impact on this phone. But it does not work outside the firewall. So we've made a conscious decision to say only if I'm on the Microsoft wireless LAN, which has certificates, will I allow the high business impact to the phone. When I leave the corporation and I go through the firewalls and I'm accessing, I can get to email, calendar, contacts, right? I can get to RMS encrypted email because now Mango supports RMS. But now are you using location as a boundary? Maybe I,
And I think where the industry is going, I don't think we're quite there yet, easily, is even geopolitical boundaries. Do I trust Steve Ballmer on Steve Ballmer's laptop more in North America than Jakarta? Corporate espionage, right? Department of Defense. What was once a friendly country is now a hostile country. The assets that are in that area, I have to treat them different, don't I? I don't think we're quite there yet, but I think we're getting there because I could spoof GPS locations, things like that on the device. But I think that's where the industry is going to build on what Patrick said. It's no longer who you are, your read write, your full control, your no access. It's no longer that. It's that plus how much you trust the device. And where is that device today? Because you didn't change, your device changed. You didn't change, your device didn't change, your location changed. It's all three of those that's making the effective consumerization of IT strategy.
Right. And then when we talk to customers, it's really going to be, you're going to be pointing different devices at different places on this pivot, right? So I might say I'm going to allow Android devices only to get this. Maybe I'll allow an iPhone to get this. Maybe I'll allow Windows Phone 7 to get this. It's going to be based upon your business needs and how effectively you can understand that complexity. The OS, the level, the hardware device, identity.
You're taking all the fun out of consumerization of IT. Right?
Well, but if it gets down to that, I mean, it's that same paradigm that we've been facing for many years, security, access versus trust. It's the same thing. Now, just that side of the pendulum is swinging because there are a whole bunch of more devices that we have to deal with. And, you know, as we were talking about, you know, high business medium and low business impact. Right? So there's two kinds of strategies that you can look at. Right? Pretty much everyone's allowing most devices to get email, calendar, contacts, right? Using Exchange, ActiveSync to do that. Great. But should, and going back to that statement, the source code repository, I'm only going to allow a managed device to access that. Okay? And then going to a medium, maybe I'll allow SharePoint, maybe I'll publish SharePoint to the outside, or maybe I'll use Office 365 to any one of those devices. So from an access control perspective, the thing that we're seeing is that today, I have all these different access points. You might have a VPN, you might have, you know, a Citrix Access Gateway or a Unified Access Gateway or a third party, Juniper, Cisco, whoever. Trying to understand what's going out of your data center or your, you know, IT organization is very complicated. What we've been working on is a couple different solutions. So with us, Unified Access Gateway allows us to have a centralized portal at the edge or internal, remember, because we talked about location. And now I can run a report that shows no matter what device, Windows, non-Windows, Android, iPhone, whatever, and I can understand what type of data that's being accessed. I can have a direct access connection coming for a fully managed device through that Unified Access Gateway. Or there's a partner of ours that also kind of adopted this paradigm, Citrix Access Gateway. And what they have is a receiver client that downloads onto your iPhone, your Android device, and allows you to then connect, do remote applications down to those. But either way, I can now go to that access portal, run a report seeing, oh, Jeff has a Windows Phone 7, an iPad, a Windows 7 Slate, and I can understand what content is being delivered to each one of those devices. And I run that report once.
Yeah. Well, and also this look ahead with the System Center, being able to then have policies being put down, thrown down upon these Android devices, the Symbian, through the Windows Phone, through the iOSs. Well, why is that important? Remember, more manageability equals more access. So if I start doing more, so Microsoft is opening up and starting to say, let's look at all these devices, see what we can manage on these devices, what they expose that I can take advantage of to put a policy on those devices. And how much I trust those devices equals how much more access I can give them. What's really interesting here is, how many of you have your own personal phone, smartphone, that you get corporate information off of, like email, calendar, and contact, but it's your own personal phone. The company didn't give it to you, right? What we're seeing is it's socially acceptable for you to succumb to a password policy on that device, isn't it? Right? You're like, oh, it's no big deal. In order for me to get a password to get my email, calendar, and contact, I've got to put a PIN on my device. What we're seeing now is, like with Windows Intune, being able to put an agent on a PC that's a non-asset of the company. So now I put an agent on there, I have a base level of security and trust of the device, now I'll give you more information. Who thinks your voice conversations are secure on your cell phones? Yeah.
Smart guys.
Right?
Smart people.
We had a guy come up to one of our sessions, our own internal sessions. He goes, "I got a story for you." This is a guy who's in mid United States. His mom calls him up one day. His name was Jeremy or Jason. Jeremy.
I don't know.
No, whatever. I didn't say his last name. His mom calls him up, says, "Hey, Jason." It was Jason. He goes, "Jason, I was just on my iPhone." Now, this could happen to anyone's phone, but I'm just giving you the facts, okay? Says, "I was just on my phone talking to my girlfriend, and a voice comes over the phone and says, 'Hello, Mary, I've been listening to you.'" She's like, "What the hell? Who is this?" He says, "Never mind. I've been listening to you and your phone conversations for the last 4 months. I know that you're not home right now. You just told your girlfriend you're at the mall. I know what your address is." And he repeated it because you gave it to this other girlfriend last week. "I know everything about you." He goes, "My God, Mom, did you call the cops? The police?" She goes, "No, I called AT&T, my cell phone provider." She's like, "Well, what did they say? Did you install this little, it was like a screensaver, you know, almost like a fishbowl application we talked about the other day,
yeah,
on the phone from the App Store?" She goes, "Yep." She goes, "Well, that was been removed, but it was taking the exploit of a security vulnerability, allowed a person to eavesdrop in a conversation. They never even had to notify themselves to you." Think about your executives now. Now, this is that piece of consumerization of IT about being defend, but don't be defensive. I'm being very defensive right now, aren't I? I'm trying to scare the hell out of you. Because now, all of a sudden, we have this really great little tool, this little toy that we're using for... Can you imagine listening to Steve Ballmer's conversations over the last 4 months? Wow. Or your heads of state? Wow. This is serious stuff, but this is stuff that we kind of need to educate our executives in our own company about. It's our responsibility to do that. How do you enable it responsibly? It's starting to put manageability in those devices.
Right, and to continue on that, is that this is an and or an or, right? So you can look at an access policy, or you can look at a management policy. At Microsoft Management Summit, this recent one, we announced that we're going to have mobile device management, that light policy management that Jeff was talking about across Windows Phone 7, Android, and iOS as well. And this is going to allow us to do, in fact, Microsoft IT has already implemented this, and they're looking at it. And so at Microsoft, we have a policy that says you can join 10 devices to the corporate exchange infrastructure. 10.
You have more than that, Patrick.
I had the special exception. I got 50. Anyway, they don't like me. But this tool allows them to control my insanity. Right? They could actually go in and see Patrick Havishy.
Nobody can
1,
control
2, 3, 4,
insanity,
yeah, up to 50. But at least now, when I get mugged with my laptop bag, this has got way too many devices in it now, at the airport, and they steal it, right? IT can now go in and see Patrick Havishy in Iconomy and see that I have this many Windows 7 machines. Oh, and I've got BitLocker turned on. Check. So I'm compliant. They can see that I have an iPhone, an iPad, an Android, a Windows Phone 7, whatever device I have. And then they could systematically go remote wipe, remote wipe, remote wipe, remote wipe, all from one console. They're not having to go to that Exchange server here and then going to a VPN server and another server and a Bez server, whatever. They can all go to one central place and remote wipe all that data that was residing upon my ones, all those devices.
How many of the companies you work for are trying to embrace consumerization of IT but not give you any more IT budget? Right? This is pretty complicated stuff.
It's crazy. So it's really about simplifying the access policy and simplifying the strategy around management, and it could be a combination, right? I can maybe do access to one, manage the device that I as a company buy you, but I can run a report in either one, and I can even integrate those, right? Since it's all based upon SQL reporting services, I can integrate that into one solution. Yes. 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 right? So the question was, as a IT organization, I didn't want to necessarily wipe the personal device, right? Because it's their personal thing, and they say a great example would be they figure out that I'm the hacker and they want to remote wipe my data, but I'm going to lose the whole thing. Microsoft, what we've done is, and that's why with Windows Phone 7, just to give you an idea, is what we've done is that all of our personal data gets backed up into SkyDrive. Right? So if someone remote wipes it, my daughter, my 9-year-old daughter, she loves playing with my phone, and she's been doing this, you know, for the last year and a half, and she's proven remote wiping, you know, my phone by incorrectly entering the PIN, and it does work really effectively.
Sweet.
Now, my experience was, and then she hides it because she feared something just went wrong, the screen went black, and it looks different. She hides it. I love my daughter.
He's raising a
hacker.
She's
my security tester. Yeah, she's. Anyway, she hasn't figured out the PIN yet, to my understanding. But so what happened was the real world experience was, okay, I had it remote wiped. Okay, pain. I went in, logged into Exchange, all my Exchange came back on. I logged into Live, all my Live data came back, right? But longer term, you're right. And the thing that has to happen across all the phones is there needs to be a complete kind of segregation of duty. Now, when we get into that, though, we're going to actually, in the end of this, when we talk about applications, it may be at the application level. Because there's like some partners or other companies out there like Good that have a container around email, calendar, contacts, and that's Exchange, and then they just wipe that.
There's a company, a Fortune 200 company in the U.S., where the employee had sued the employer because they remote wiped their machine, their phone. He just lost it under the couch for a while, right? But they remote wiped it, and he lost a lot of personal information. He's suing the employer.
And the other thing that happens is when you accept the policy to join your phone to the Microsoft Exchange infrastructure, there's actually a legal disclaimer that you have to sign saying Microsoft, as soon as you enable that, has the right to, you know, remote wipe your phone. But currently, most of the platforms, other than Windows Phone 7, you have to find some third-party backup solution for your personal data. But as more phones go to the cloud and the web, and I think Apple's starting to do some backups on the consumer side as well, that's going to become prevalent. But longer term, yes, there has to be better containers around the two. Now, along those lines is the other thing that we want to talk about, Citrix, one of our partners, and managing the access into remote desktops, remote applications. Right. So this is another way, if you don't want to put any kind of corporate data onto that device, you can get iReceiver on there, on iPhone, on an Android, on whatever kind of device, and have that business data never reside on that phone. And so then they don't even have to actually join it to the Exchange infrastructure. And you can publish SharePoint sites. You can publish Outlook Web Access. You can publish these containers of that. So if I do wipe that, I don't have to wipe the device anymore. I just shut off the connection at the Citrix Access Gateway.
Yeah. Yeah, but tomorrow Patrick will go in. That's not far enough. If you talk to VMware, don't get me wrong. I love Citrix, great partner, and they have a great solution. That's only a piece of the puzzle. It's to provide a remote desktop in there. And as we all know, users circumvent your actions, right? So if I bring in a device into the workplace, and I'm supposed to use a VDI or a virtual desktop with terminal services or something like that to gain access to my corporate data, guess what? All they have to do is go whack, whack, server, whack, share. It says, what's your username and password? They put it in, and they have access to that content from an unmanaged machine, right? Patrick will talk more tomorrow about what's the full range of security. How do we not let that unmanaged device even ping those specific maybe HBI and MBI servers? So it's a 360 holistic view over this. Now, one of the great things that I'm excited about is, dependent on the device type, System Center Configuration Manager 2012 can take a look at not just who you are, the device that and the device that you're on, and says, well, that's a desktop that you happen to be logged on to today. I'm going to deliver an application to you through MSI. Oh, that's a laptop. Maybe it's managed or unmanaged, but I might deliver an app VApp to you. It's the same application, but you are on a different constraints. So I'm going to deliver it to you differently. Oh, you're on a non-Windows PC. I'm going to deliver maybe a Citrix agent client to you or an RDP client to you of the same exact application. At the end of the day, you need the application. I don't care how it gets to me. I just need the application. Being able to dynamic deliver that application dependent on the device type or where you are, link speed, things like that, that's huge enablement of this technology.
And Jeff's going to do a session on that tomorrow.
And I'll do a session on that tomorrow.
Yep. Yes. productivity.
Productivity. You know, this is really interesting. I love this slide. It really starts to build the foundation. It's first and best in Windows, best in breed across all. If we look at the top left corner there, best on Windows, Link, Office, SharePoint, best in class, Mac, Android, iPhone, iPad. Absolutely. Taking advantage of all these great features and capabilities of our Office productivity suite across the platforms. Absolutely. Am I going to put my deepest, darkest secrets on those unmanaged devices? Ha! Now we get back into security, trust, right? Just because I can do something doesn't mean I should do something. Right? I'm not going to give that analogy. There's some animals out there that can do things that shouldn't, that, cause, just because they can. right? The social aspect of this. See where I'm going with this? The productivity play in the applications. Yes, we can be cross-platform on this, but it goes right back to, what are you wanting to do with this? Is it just email, calendar, and contact, some collaboration at a collaboration level, or is it your company's financial information? I can expose that out on those devices, but it's having that back-end guarding that I'm concerned about. The look ahead, yeah, Link Voice, mobile, Mac client, global standards, you know, services integration, 365, absolutely. This is where we're going. It's having that broader and deeper conversation with our customer.
And the other thing, quickly though, the other thing is the SharePoint team has actually been leading the charge on all these other platforms. If you look at today, SharePoint Mobile and full SharePoint runs across every mobile browser on the market today, right? I can pick up an iPhone and browse a SharePoint site. I can pick up an Android. I can pick up anyone, a BlackBerry, and browse SharePoint today. And then, and Jeff kind of glanced over it, but I want to make sure is that we're going to have Link on Android, on iPad, and Windows Phone 7. Today, one of the highest rated apps on the iTunes store is Bing. Right? OneNote. We just released an update to OneNote 1.2 that adds some additional capabilities of OneNote to the iPad. Right? So this is really critical. So we're extending SharePoint, we're extending collaboration, we're extending all these things to these non-Windows devices so you can actually have this seamless experience across all things.
Don't get me wrong. Well, we are embracing all these devices, but don't get me wrong. Windows still continues to kick butt, and next release even furthering that. How many of you have tried with Office 2010 the real-time collaboration? Both of you working on the same document at the same time. How many of you? Not very many. And this has been out for quite a while now, right? Unbelievable. You grab the document from a SharePoint site. Patrick and I just did this this last few months in collaboration with a lot of the decks that we've been working on coming out on tour. I'm at home, he's in the office, or vice versa. We're opened up the same document, the same PowerPoint. We're working on different slides. We're working on the same document. And then just go, you know, show me the updates, and I can see his updates. It's just fantastic. This is collaboration that seems like Star Wars, super futuristic technology to our customers, a lot of our customers, or a lot of your executives. They're like, God, I wish I could do that. Yeah, it's stupid simple. Office 2010 SharePoint, open up the document. Both of you, go for it. Being able to open up that document and across my phone, across the browser, and across my device. That's just huge. Still, people don't realize that we can do this stuff. I've had a lot of companies try to get me to come over to their company this last year. Say, Jeff, we want to hire you. I'm like, you know what? I am so used to all this kind of real-time collaboration, being able to work the way I want to work, having, you know, Link integration and presence and all of these things that a lot of companies out there, they're 5 years behind what I'm already used to. I can't go back. Once you taste it, it's like direct access. How many of you have ever used direct access? That's pretty typical. And that, all those, two Microsoft people up here.
They better be raising their hands.
The other people, it's like crack, isn't it? You don't want to go back, right? It's amazing. I'm probably going to get blogged on that one. Social tools. Now you think about this as far as consumerization of IT. A lot of the discussions that Patrick and I have with these executives is, okay, you look at what's happening on the internet. Is it a fad or a trend? Is it a fad or a trend? fads just kind of go up and they go away. Is it a trend? Oh, if it's a trend, we really need to take a good look at it, because that's obviously how people want to communicate. They want to communicate that way on their devices. I take that same kind of social computing trend and I duplicate it inside my firewall or make it available to my people. Why? Because then I can have compliancy issues capabilities on that application. I can still make that application available to the internet, but it's obviously this is the way people are wanting to communicate and collaborate. Great example. There was a really nice girl down in Sydney. This is about a year and a half ago. She just got her master's in business. She went to, and you would know the name of this company, it's one of the largest trading companies in Australia, right? So beautiful high-rise building in Sydney. She went through the interview process. They gave her her contract. She looked it over. Beautiful. Great salary, great benefits. She goes, I want to see where I would be working and with the computing system that I'd be using. They're like, okay, great, come on, this way. They showed her desk and all the stuff, and they said, this is the computer. She says, look, well, I do a lot of social networking. This is how I plan to make this company money, how I plan to make myself money as a trader. I'm going to use all these social, trends that are happening out there. Ooh, we're a serious business. We don't allow you to do that, right? That was their response back to her. She handed back the contract, said, no, thank you. I don't want to work for a company like that. She went to go work for Microsoft. We got a fantastic employee. Now, we don't want to sit there and steal all your employees, right? But you think about this. She's a fantastic asset because we said, yes, we can do these social things in a responsible way. We have set that up. We've kept our costs down because of things like the Core IO model, things like that. That's an important concept when we're talking about consumerization.
And the other key thing to add here is that a lot of this is not necessarily a software solution to this. This is a policy, right? We get trained on how do we responsibly use these social networking tools. And that's something that you have to do. And the other interesting thing about the story you didn't
say. Don't point at me.
Say. Yeah, I'm going to point.
Don't point at me. Don't point at me. Don't touch me.
The other thing you didn't say is that the other thing she said, that desktop that you were going to give me, this ugly brick, is not okay. She wanted a thin, small, sexy laptop as well.
Yeah.
And so it wasn't just a social aspect, but it was, can you imagine, I'm thinking back when I got into the business world, I would never have gone to my first interview out of college and say, I'm sorry, I'm not going to work for you because you got that ugly brick and that's what you're going to give me.
Kids are spoiled these days.
I know.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Applications.
Show the video?
Yeah. So we're going to show you a quick video. This is a partner of ours, called Infusion. And they're really going to show you this an interesting concept of writing an application once across multiple platforms. So let's go ahead and...
We slowed it down.
Come on.
Okay. Oh, we're going to show you the full speed version. And check this out. There's business content and there's personal content.
Design perspective, it's becoming a lot more difficult as you have all these different devices. And
you want to see that? You want to see it again?
Was that cool? Did you guys think that was cool?
Yeah, I'll see it again.
Okay.
It's fast, right?
Yeah.
Now we showed you two demos. It goes by so fast.
But imagine going anywhere, picking up any one of these devices and having the exact same user experience across the different form factors.
This is written in Silverlight. Silverlight's that kind of nirvana going across all these platforms. Now, we are taking that to HTML5 and JavaScript for the next version of Windows, but I'm not saying Silverlight's dead. I'm just saying we're expanding upon that work that we did with Silverlight, taking a lot of that same capabilities and bringing those forward into what HTML5 promises.
Now, the next piece is, as we've released HTML5 on Mango and on Windows 7, of course, and going forward into Windows 8, the application paradigm for enterprises has to change. All right, so let's think about this statement. For the first time ever, we have over 1 million mobile applications on the planet. Right? I don't know what the exact percentage of enterprise versus consumer is, but over a million mobile applications on the planet. So in the past, the security guys would say, oh, we have to have device encryption. We can't afford just to stop at device encryption anymore. The applications have to have this context that I need to have application-level encryption, application-level security boundaries. Going back to my phone, MSIT deployed an app to my phone. It's called Apps for Work. Okay. So this kind of gets back to your question as well. How do I remote wipe just business data? Now, when I first got, I got an email, an RMS-protected email from Microsoft IT, and it says, here's a link that's not published to the public marketplace. It's a new feature in Mango that allows us to have enterprise apps hidden from public. But in that, I got the link, and I clicked on the link, and it installed this Apps for Work. Okay. First thing they did after it installed, there's nothing in the file. There's nothing in the application. It was a kind of a shell of an app. It came across SSL connection, so securely got down to my phone and installed. The first thing it did was it prompted me for my credentials through Active Directory Federation Services. So I had to log in to Redmond, to my domain. Okay. Then it made a secure web services call after I authenticated and started downloading a catalog of other applications that Microsoft IT has created for me. One being that high business impact thing that only runs on the Microsoft wireless network that I talked about. Okay. So the next thing was I decided to select that particular app. I wanted to get my high business impact. I was sitting on the Microsoft wireless network. I installed it. That app, again, had nothing in it. That app, first thing it did when I launched it, made an Active Directory Federation Services call, and I had to authenticate that application. Then the data for that app started streaming down into that. Okay, a feature on Windows Phone 7 from RTM, so it's already there before Mango, is that I can do application-level encryption. Application-level encryption. And each app has what we call isolated storage. Okay, so if I was a hacker and I tried to hack into it and tried to write another app that was trying to interrogate and trying to get information out of that, I couldn't because they're separated from a storage boundary. And we've turned on app encryption on that as well. Okay. So now, if I wanted to, and this is part of the thing that we're looking at going forward and improvements in these enterprise apps, is that I could actually clean the session state off the application at the end of that session if I wanted to. That's where you kind of get into a usability perspective. Do I really want to authenticate every single time, do that, wait, clean it out, and do that, rinse and repeat?
Depends on the content.
It depends on the content, exactly. So think
did
about
you say that. Rinse and repeat?
Rinse and repeat.
You did.
I said rinse and repeat. Then, so now the context is, even if I gave you this phone unlocked, every single time you tried to get to any of my corporate data, you couldn't because it would prompt you for my username and password every single time you launched that. So I've put a security boundary at the app. So now I can take that app and I don't have to manage this device because I'm managing the application and I, as an IT organization, understand that I have full application level encryption and it's not going to be stolen from mine.
It was pretty fun when Patrick had an epiphany and figured all this out. He was so excited.
Oh my God. But this is different, right? Because most of your IT organizations, you're saying, I have to have device encryption. Right? Do you really care if your employees' Facebook contacts and all their personal stuff gets lost? No. Do you care about your corporate data getting lost? So let's move this to the other non-Windows platforms, right? So this is kind of the paradigm. Can you trust an iPhone from not getting jailbroken? Can you trust an Android from not getting rooted? You can't. So you, as IT individuals and app developers, have to start thinking at the application level and start thinking about protecting the enterprise applications. And the other thing, that one of the next things that we're looking at doing is having the ability to kind of create remote wipe of applications as well. Since it's constantly connected onto a device, theoretically I can make a push to that app and say, clear the cache. Or I could set a timer. I could say, you know, every week you have to refresh and make sure that you still have valid credentials. But this is a huge paradigm shift from a mobile application development perspective. And then, of course, the secure web services become critical as well. And as you start trying to write applications across platforms, HTML5, right? And Apple and Google are saying they're going to support all the HTML5 standard. We're fully invested in supporting HTML5. But writing an app once, taking a Metro kind of inspired UI, what a lot of our customers are doing, and writing secure web services in the back end. So public or private clouds, access to Office 365, something in the cloud, but then having a lightweight app that's similar across all these platforms, making SSL connections back to a web service, and I'm writing an application once for the first time across many devices. It's a lot different than we've been thinking in the past as well.
It's amazing.
I'm going to skip that. Okay. So we're going to talk a little bit about devices. We had a whole device session, but we got the video working now.
Oh yeah, this video is the case studies we did with competing against iPad and some of the success and where we won, why we won. Roll the tape.
One of the biggest advantages of using a Windows 7 device is, you know, it is enterprise ready.
Our auditors' needs are to operate in a full-blown Windows environment with the Office suite, and you just can't do that with an iPad. You can do anything on the slate that you could do on any other Windows machine is probably the greatest advantage. It also allows the ability to hook up with peripheral devices such as printers, scanners, mice that's just not offered by other non-Windows-based tablet devices.
We chose to develop our businesses using the Windows 7 slates for obviously the richest consumer experience we could get and the seamless integration with the Azure cloud.
Putting our business applications on the slate device was very easy.
In terms of return on investment, it's going to give us the ability to do some cross-selling and upselling, better CRM tool. It's going to make a better experience for our salespeople and for our customers, so it's just a big win for everybody.
That guy have a story.
CME Group has used Microsoft for years, so bringing the Windows 7 slate technology provides comfort of security and manageability that we have been accustomed to for years.
I think that slate shows Microsoft is listening to their customers, they're taking the capabilities of the Windows operating system, and they're bringing the capabilities of a tablet to it.
One of the things that gets me excited about touch on Windows 7 is that all of my professional experience as a developer is still applicable to this new technology.
We were able to develop a brand new slate application utilizing existing skills that we had, such as Silverlight, .NET, and C#, which allowed us to save a lot of time and money.
The technology that New Ventures has worked with Microsoft to create for the Red Spoon Squad is really what makes the entire business hum. We're able to take all these touch points and really create a user experience never seen before in any General Mills business.
Being able to have a PowerPoint presentation where you have the transition be the white and you can go and slide your finger across and it's like you're turning the page of the book. It's very organic. It's very natural. Now with this device, I can show them the flash ad and say, what do you want to change? And use the assumptive close to actually close the sale.
When you have a machine that can operate as quickly as this, you can get in and out of appointment and on to the next appointment. And the more sales calls that we can make, the more money we're going to make.
I sell beer.
And
use this machine to do it.
I love that.
With the Windows 7 slate, I just feel like we have a leg up on our competition because they're dealing with antiquated systems. We're dealing with high-tech devices that impress our customers. It's an amazing product.
Basically, life cycle development, ease of use, some of the applications that they had running on their old PCs went over to the new PCs, getting these things out there quickly, time to market on these applications. The application layer is really where we won a lot because the stuff that with all our whole app dev tools have really, you know, matured way past where they were 10 years ago and have done a fantastic job. Windows 7, we're still, this next year, Gartner said, look it, you know, make sure that your sales team doesn't get their eye off the prize this next year. Windows 7 Enterprise is amazing. Gartner told us this. They said, look it, it is amazing. This next year, there's so much value out there in Windows 7. Don't let your customers start to, you know, waffle on what they want to do waiting for Windows 8. This is the year still for Windows 7. There's massive deployments going on out there, massive value in that Windows 7 platform. We're very hopeful in application compatibility with Windows 8. It's a lot of the work that we do with Windows 7. In fact, Chris, can you talk about that?
Yes.
Not yet. At some point. Huge value. And going forward, this is still a great platform. Now, obviously, the slates for Windows 7, they're designed for a mouse and a keyboard. So at that application layer, we can start to get through some of those things. If it's a line of business application that we're working on, that's really where the secret sauce with those customers.
But I want to make sure that people are clear and understand. I mean, yes, keyboard, mouse first, pen, and then touch, right? You know, as I mentioned earlier, 40 points of touch. But we've done some other things. We've had customers come to us and say, okay, I want to take an iPad and use it as a line of business device, right? I was working with a large-scale financial bank, and they said, well, okay, we want a scenario where you might possibly come to me at the door to the bank, and they would want to be greeted by a banker with a slate. So they started, went down and tried to do this on Android and iPad and things like that. But from a banking perspective, I need to be able to sign my signature, right? I mean, that's something you have to do to close the deals, usually, or get your signature on file. And they found out that, you know, on the iPad, there's capacitive pins. And capacitive pins mean if I touch the screen with my finger, or it emulates my finger, so they were getting ghosting. So as someone tried to put their palm down on the screen and write, it would go crazy. Built into Windows 7, in fact, my device here, this is like a hybrid, this HP EliteBook, right? I could spin this around. I got an extended battery on it. And a lot of our slates do this as well. Spin this around, pull out the pin. We have what we call palm detection. So what that means is I put my palm down on the screen and I start writing, it knows that this is a pen, that's my palm, and it's not going to ghost. So we've done things in there. It knows double-clicking or right-clicking. You put your finger down and do that, it right-clicks. There's gestures in here. I could flick to the right. I can set that up to delete. If I'm in Outlook, I could say that right-flick means a delete, or the angled flick means delete. You can customize these devices. But again, we don't really market that, but it's in there. It's built into Windows 7. So we went back to that customer and said, okay, here. So we gave them an HP 500 slate, right? And we wrote a line of business application, a touch application, and they have a pen as well. But the other part of the thing that was weird in their transaction was you don't want to stay on that slate the whole time, right? You might want to be able to market to them. So the HP has a dock, so they could take that HP, greet them at the counter. They have a credit card reader that was attached to the side of it. They took their bank card, handed it to their customer and said, here's a PIN. Put your PIN code in. Oh, hi, Mr. Doe. How are you doing? What are you interested in? And they start walking back to their desk. At the desk was a docking station. All Windows 7 devices can multi-monitor out. So they have a 27-inch multi-monitor sitting now between you, the banker, and the customer.
For Patrick to test this out, of course, he has like a 54-inch monitor in his office.
Yeah, I do.
You get a suntan with this thing.
I'm the device guy. Yeah, you walk about, ooh. Anyway, so then I have this monitor between you and the customer, and it's coming right off that slate. So the slate's still controlling the entire experience, and that happened to be a multi-touch monitor as well. A 40-point multi-touch monitor. So both the customer and the banker can be starting to touch that device. Oh, I want this. And they had a selection of new offerings from the bank, and they did some marketing flashes that came across to try to, you know, upsell them on whatever. And then at the end of the time, they said, okay, we've selected this, and the banker had the keyboard and the mouse plugged into that docking station. So he was able to go in and do, you know, a bunch of typing, make notes very easily. And then at the end, he said, okay, finalize. Then he turns the slate back to the customer, hands them the pen, and says, here, sign your signature. We're done. So these are the kind of scenarios that you start thinking about, right? Out of the box. This is Windows 7. We didn't have to go do anything. We wrote an app, but it's all built on touch, pen, and all these different kinds of form factors coming together, the multi-dock, the peripherals.
It's amazing.
It's amazing. And, of course, we did a lot about Windows Phone 7 as well, extending this. And that same bank now is looking at extending. So before that customer gets in, they're writing a Windows Phone app. So they'll push that out to their existing customers. And then even they're looking at before, I mean, having to have their credit card, they come in and go, I'm here, does a Bluetooth connection to their system, to that slate device, and transmit some information as a multi-factor authentication.
We were working with some retail companies, some high-end retail companies. They're looking at this socialization, how far can they push that, and they're looking at these applications to go on these phones that, because maybe I'm a high-valued person in their shopper in their organization, just because I have that application installed on my phone, someone gets notified when I enter the property. And they can go out and find me, see my picture, and say, oh, there's Jeff. He's a big shopper. and start identifying me and then start working with me at that social aspect. Kind of weird, kind of creepy. Yeah, so why Microsoft? Again, you know, here we set up at the very beginning of the session saying responsible consumerization. How do we enable it responsibly? At that application level, at that security level, at that collaboration level, there's a lot of moving parts here. Hopefully what we've got across to you is a lot of the information that we give the executives at that higher level. We didn't get really super geeky. We went geekier than we go with most executives.
Yeah.
But for this session is, what is that pitch? What's that storyline? Hopefully that resonated with you as far as what you're feeling, what the pressures are coming from the top down and the bottom up in your own organizations. You have some context now to start having those trusted advisor conversations with your executives, right? Said, okay, what are you wanting to do with this device? How far are you wanting to push the boundaries on that? How far are you going to let me manage that device? How much more money are you going to give me, right? Because that's one of the biggest pressures is they want you to enable and support all these things, but they're not giving you any more money. But a lot of that's around the context of, let's understand really what you're trying to do with this and then what's available that we can offer you as an IT department. Because a lot of IT departments, they feel like they're getting minimalized, let's say. They feel like they got to do something. They haven't really done anything for 10 years since they deployed XP. They got to do something. Oh, I'll support an iPad. I did something. Right? No. Let's really push the boundary on this thing. Let's talk about the social aspects of this. Let's talk about the collaboration aspects of this. Let's talk about, yeah, it's always any device, okay, but what can we do to that device? Security equals manageability, right? The more I trust the device, the more access I can give it. Anything else to say there?
And then here's our Twitter and our blogs. So with that, we'll take questions. Was this a good session? Did that help? Yes? No? Okay. All right, so we'll take questions. Actually, if you go to Microsoft.com/consumerization, there is that plus five other versions. There's a kind of like this guy. They did that whole cartoon thing, and there's some other examples. There's another one that's more focused on the social networking aspect as well.
And Patrick and I have a bunch of consumerization videos up on Microsoft.com, too, if you just do a search on some of our content. If you wanted to try to repeat this to your executives and give them something to look at, a lot of our content is up there in video interviews.
Yeah. Mm. Yes.
You know what's really great? So the question is, we talked to execs, what's the most common feedback? Some of the most common feedback is, I thought you guys were a closed system, like a Microsoft-only system. You guys really opened my eyes to say that, wow, Microsoft's embracing all of these other devices responsibly. You're creating applications for these other devices out there. You're creating management stack for these other applications or other OSs and devices out there. I never knew. And right then, we kind of, even though we've always had a pretty good, I'll say, opened architecture as far as POSIX support and as far as, you know, all these other things that are out there, they still kind of considered us this closed system. And I think that it was really refreshing of what I see to see that we've opened it up. What about you, Pat?
Right, and the other feedback is that everyone's starving for this information. How do I really do this?
Yeah.
And so the next session we're going to do tomorrow is really going to be, how do I physically enable the infrastructure I need today? Now, and part of it is, yeah, it's kind of scary, and we do it goes up and down, right? Because we're showing them how bad it really is in some ways, right? Because of the security issues on some of these other platforms. But I think that first slide...
We don't show the execs that deck that you're showing tomorrow.
No, we don't show that. But this deck. We open their eyes to understanding that. And in the end, the outcome usually is that they're not going to go and jump into a BYOD, fully bring your own device thing. It's kind of a mix between the two, right? So they see that there's going to be places for these Slate devices, places for these mobile access. And that first chart, this chart is usually is what most executives take away with and go to their IT decision makers and say, okay, how do we plot the devices that we as a business are going to allow onto that and then start enabling that? So they use that as their, you know, kind of foundation for...
We've also seen overlaid of location on that too. Yeah. Yeah.
So you're excited about Yes.
The question is, you talk to the execs, they get all excited, and now they go talk to the security guys. What do the security guys say? I'll let that one take that.
Yeah, I mean, so the security guys, well, so it depends on who the security guy. If he's the Linux security guy, if it's a, you know, so it gets interesting to have the discussion. But usually what happens is there's a follow-up, right? So we at Microsoft will go down and have a deeper security discussion with them, right? Because the executive, in the end, just like Jeff said, it's about the bling. They don't care. They just want the iPad on their network, or they want whatever that device is on the network. But tomorrow's session will really, I can show you how I can protect data on any kind of device. And most of them are all about, most of the security guys don't, I don't want to put anything on an Android or on an iPhone or on any of these devices. They want to protect that. We'll show them, like through UAG, I can open up one port, remote desktop, I can publish remote desktop, SharePoint, all this other stuff, and it gives them the complete control of what's happening to that.
On the device type
On the
basis.
Device type basis as well.
He just gave you a little, what he's going to talk about, because there's a whole bunch of other stuff on protecting the network layer too. But we're not going to talk about that today.
Yeah. But so the security guy is definitely paranoid with all these devices. But if we could simplify that one axis at the edge, that usually helps the security person. They can run one report.
We got the hook.
We got the hook.
Thank you guys very much. Have a good rest of your day. We'll see you guys tonight at the party. Tonight's the party, right?
Yeah. Tonight? All right.
Wear your
capes.
We really have to wear capes?
Yes.
All right.